This is the CC Radio Podcast.
Welcome to the Countdown Podcast. This is our feature review for you this week. We're going to bust out Once Upon a Time in Hollywood for you. My name is Wayne.
And my name is Paul. Straight into it then for Quentin Tarantino's latest, his ninth film.
Ninth film,
and apparently the second last film he's ever going to make. It is obviously written by he and stars Leonardo DiCaprio, Brad Pitt, Margot Robbie, Emile Hirsch, Margot Qualley, Timothy Oliphant, Dakota Fanning, Bruce Dern, Al Pacino, Kurt Russell. The list goes on.
That's a long
and
list.
On. It is also narrated by Kurt Russell, but we'll get into that. Budget of, reportedly, according to Wikipedia here, 90 to 96 million. I'd heard 110 in other quarters.
Okay.
Thus far has made about 117 million at the worldwide box office. Projected to do a fair bit more than that at this particular stage.
Hey, 117.
Yeah, has made so far.
How long has it been out?
It's been out in America for quite a while.
Yeah, I would have expected a bit more. All right.
The rest of the world's following out slower, as per here, which is why we're reviewing this now. We had to wait an extra 3 weeks America, because once again, the distributors seem to think that that is cool. So that is why I had to wait to hear our thoughts. But that at least gives most of you a chance to have seen it already. Wayne, what's it about? I guess you can describe this pretty simply.
It is about the lives of probably three main characters. Leo DiCaprio plays Rick Dalton, an aging TV cowboy whose alcoholism does not pair well with his growing suspicion that he's becoming a has-been.
Mm.
His closest pal and drinking buddy is longtime stuntman Cliff Booth, played by Brad Pitt, who has trouble getting work because people think he killed his wife and got away with it. And it also shows you Sharon Tate, played by Margot Robbie, a real-life 60s starlet. That's it. It's about their lives. It's just, it's like a narrative of their lives.
It's really more about Dalton and Booth with,
yeah, probably,
with Sharon Tate being kind of set dressing on the side as less the film her, builds towards the fate that befalls her in a real life. So
yeah,
we will talk more about that as well. Now, there are spoilers, particularly towards the end of this film, so we have a very clear non-spoiler section now, and then we'll get into the details of the film after that, so you may safely listen if for whatever reason you are interested but haven't seen the film as of yet. Overall impression, first of all, Wayne. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Tarantino yay or Tarantino nay?
Tarantino meh.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, look, this is not unpleasant to watch by any means, but in my opinion, it is going to be one of the less entertaining ones he's made. Probably one of his worst.
Okay. Right? All right. Yep.
Not as bad as, like, if you count Death Proof, then that's the worst, but like...
For sure. Does anybody like Death Proof more than any other Tarantino film?
No, I don't think so. I think even he kind of says that. That's why he doesn't call it one of his movies. Look, it looks amazing, and what's good is very, very good, but the pace detracts from the overall film.
Yeah.
Would you say? What do you think?
Yeah, look, I think I'm maybe a little bit warmer on it than you are, a little bit.
Okay, I'd be interested to talk about this.
And here's what I think Tarantino brings, and I was really consciously tuning in with myself and wanting to be aware of what was going on for me. I was excited.
So was I.
There are very few filmmakers that make me excited just for the cinematic experience.
I agree completely.
Of checking out their latest at the theater.
Mm.
And so I was sitting there before the movie rolled. I'm like, okay, cool. This is. You know, I'd heard some mixed reports and I'd seen some very divisive scoring on this year.
Yeah,
heaps of 5 stars, and then a bunch of people giving it 2-star type of level.
Really?
They're saying that it's slow, it's meandering, it's plodding.
It's so slow,
and I can see that. I can. For the most part, though, I got past that.
So
because of the magic of what he's weaving on the screen.
Yeah. So did I. But.
Well, let's get to specifics.
Yeah, go ahead.
What is it that you liked, generally speaking, about the film?
Okay, fair enough. I enjoyed the dialogue and the characters, okay? I didn't know anything about this film when I walked in on purpose. I'm doing that these days, all right? So I didn't even know what it was about.
And I will now share. There was a moment and I looked at my watch, 128 minutes in, where Wayne's like, oh my God.
Actually,
because he just realized what the film was building
to. I visibly shuddered, okay? Because that's it. And like, I think Paul said that, I don't know if you want to mention this or not, but I didn't know, because what the film is touted as is a depiction of some sort of the Manson.
Yes. So Charlie Manson is a real life figure, and we all know what happened with his family as they murdered.
That's right. And they murdered people.
Sharon Tate.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, that's real life.
That's real life, right? So I didn't realize that until I saw a certain moment in the middle. Oh, wait, it's about this? And I got really upset because if you know anything about the real life thing that happened, it is absolutely horrible. I actually don't recommend you talk about it. Oh, look it up because it's shit. So anyway, I was sitting there going, oh, I don't want to watch that, right? So anyway, we'll go into how that happened.
It was pretty funny.
He saw me shuddering.
So you said the dialogue you liked. I actually think that this was less Tarantino dialogue-y than many of his more recent films.
I agree completely. And you know what? The thing that probably, one of the things I really liked was I didn't know it was going to be Sharon Tate and you're going to represent Bruce Lee and Steve McQueen, actual people in the... And when that happened, I was like, oh, that's really, really interesting. Because now, because you finally see Damian Lewis playing Steve McQueen, because everyone makes a joke about how he looks like Steve McQueen. And so it's kind of cool, you know? So I liked all of that stuff, but nothing... Stuff was happening, but nothing was happening.
Well, okay. Well, I think the production design on this movie is outstanding.
I would agree.
How much does it... I felt like I was...
I know, it felt like you
were... I wasn't alive in this era, but it felt like I was there, more so than any film that I can think of that wasn't shot at that time.
First of all, the 60s is the coolest, most stylish era ever. I've always, always...
Okay, well,
that,
right? I don't know.
Then it becomes 70s and it goes fucking south.
Right? But yeah, I think the way that the town was dressed, there's heaps and heaps of shots of Brad Pitt's booth driving around through these streets of LA now, that time frame with the music pumping. And the music, the soundtrack, as always, is phenomenal.
Sure.
In the past, I've been guilty of going, I don't know about these songs, and then coming to like them.
Urge Overkill, everyone. Urge Overkill.
Yeah. But in this film, I was digging it the whole way through. I'm like, yeah, a bit of Treat It Right. And Hush from Deep Purple is one of my favorite songs from the era that was in there. And then a whole bunch of other ones, which I'm like, oh, I don't know this song, but it's cool. It's playing out here and I'm enjoying it.
That's his thing.
Exactly. That is what he brings. And I would say DiCaprio and Pitt are both fantastic.
Yep.
Really, really good. If DiCaprio doesn't get nominated for an Academy Award, I'll be really shocked.
I want to know... Really?
Yeah, I think he was that...
He was really, really good, don't get me wrong.
There's a couple of scenes where he absolutely just nails every emotional beat.
When he's acting?
Yes.
So that is much, much harder to do than just acting. I'm sure of it. It's meta acting.
We're seeing it from the point of view of what's being shot.
Yeah.
And it's playing out like a real scene in this Western that he's in. And then suddenly he just breaks character.
Yeah. And it's so good.
And it's perfect.
But to actually have, you know, bring that emotion to that, like, you anyway, that's really cool. And I also think Brad Pitt may be one of the handsomest men in the world.
Oh, but Blake's over 50.
He's killing it, man. I'm thinking I'd fuck him.
Takes his shirt off and there's a collective groan through the entire audience.
He's got sinews on his shoulders. That's really hard. Yeah. that's just a thing. But when, like, you know, he's singing in the car and he's doing this peace sign, it's like, really cool looking guy. But I'm interested in what you said there about Brad Pitt, like, driving and shit. Okay, because me and Paul, obviously, like always, we've never talked about this, right?
Yep.
And I'm like, what the fuck does Paul think about this? Because I'm looking at it going, all right, so we got a bit of Ghost Dog happening here where it's just scenes
the
of him way driving.
The samurai.
Yeah, it's just driving, but and they're not boring shots of him driving. They're, you know, angle. I think in this particular scene where Brad Pitt's driving, I think the reason they did that, other than Quentin Tarantino being a bit indulgent, is that...
Yeah, there's indulgence here.
They wanted to show that he lives far away from Leo DiCaprio. That's the only thing I could come up with. Because otherwise, it's just boring.
Well, I also think he wants to show off that, look at this world. Look at all these cars from the era. Like, there's so little CGI in this film. And where it is, it's used very deliberately and it's really impressive. The rest of it, it's just about all set dressed.
I didn't notice it. I didn't notice that there was all... There were nice shots, but there were so many of them.
And also, I want to say that I think this is Tarantino's best use of a camera in a film. There are so many awesome shots in this movie, like a lot of crane shots, above the action, coming back down into another shot, because Dalton's house is right next door to Sharon Tate's house. We got a couple of transition shots between the two.
That was cool.
Big crown. And there's an amazing shot in the scene which features, the main scene features Bruce Lee and...
Oh my
Brett,
God.
Which is just incredibly constructed. It's so, so good.
I spent that whole... There's a Bruce Lee section, that's what I'll say, and that... I spent that whole time being enamored with that, like, spiked it up with me. And I'm sitting there going, whoever's doing that Bruce Lee or the actor,
Mike Moe's name is
killing it. Because as a youngster, I liked a lot of Bruce Lee movies.
Sure.
Right? And so that's exactly how he talks, that's exactly how he moves, and it is as close as possible to probably even his fighting style. And it was really, really cool. So my favorite thing about the movie, hands down.
All right. Can I get into a couple of more esoteric...
Yes, please, because that's what's going to happen now.
I think this film works better if you read it as Tarantino's comment on himself in the Hollywood system.
Okay, now we're getting deep cuts.
Yeah.
Talk to me about it.
So I think both Dalton and Booth reflect different sides of Tarantino.
All right, go on.
Right, and Dalton is the insecure, like, I'm not relevant, I'm losing my place, I'm fading, I'm getting older, I'm not connected with what people want anymore.
And I have everything, but I feel like I have nothing.
Yeah, like... Is this it? Is this as good as it gets type thing?
Yeah.
And then Booth is the cocksure, swagger-filled side of his personality where he's just like, fuck you, I'm going to make what I want to fucking
exactly.
make.
Exactly. I'll do whatever I want.
Yeah. And it's like their bromance, their relationship is the centerpiece of this film, and it's fantastic. Like, they so lived in. They really do feel like good mates. Yeah. And I guess if you're talking about dual sides of your personality, that kind of works as well. So I liked it at that level. Like, I'm like, oh yeah, I can see it. Tarantino's putting himself in here, not in a self-indulgent way, but in a way of saying, hey, look at my worries and concerns, insecurities.
Admittedly, I did not think that, but now that you bring it up, it's interesting. You're right, because the rich Dalton is unhappy.
Yeah.
But the poor, relatively poor, like, lives in a fucking trailer. Lives in a trailer. Yeah. But he's seems to be completely, everything works for him, kind of, except for the trailer thing.
He just rolls with it.
He's like, yeah, whatever, this is what I do, you know? And so that's very seductive if you're an artist, you know, that you're the starving artist who actually likes himself, as opposed to...
He's just very sure of it'll work out, you know?
Yeah. I suppose if you look like Brad Pitt, you probably are used to thinking that, but...
Yes, that is true. The other part was the clues in the title. This is a fairy tale, this film.
Well, I didn't expect what happened to happen. Yeah. Absolutely, it's a fairy tale.
Well, again, we'll come to that in spoilers, but I think it's very strongly implied and becomes increasingly apparent the further that you go that this is maybe not as straightforward as you might think.
Well, that's why this is a problem, because with Quentin Tarantino films, the threat of violence hangs over the whole film.
Yep.
And you know, or you want, I don't know, for me, every one of his movies,
yeah, well, the film builds to that in this one. And there's a couple of scenes late in the film, again, we'll talk about more in spoilers, where there is, the tension really does ramp up.
It does. And I think...
But it takes a long time.
No, dude, it takes too long, yeah. Okay? And my issue here is that you've got Quentin Tarantino, and he's like, this smacks of the... He's now become like an old Hollywood guy who's like, I'm just shooting what I want to shoot. You know, he's not making a tight movie anymore. He's making a movie for him.
Well, this is shorter than The Hateful Eight. Do you know what I mean?
But The Hateful Eight didn't feel as long.
No, The Hateful Eight has a lot more going on.
It's okay to go 3 hours if you entertain me the whole time, yeah. Okay? Now, here's what I think is going on. This is very obtuse.
Okay.
But, and you're gonna freak out when I mention this movie that I'm not comparing it to, but kind of am. You and I once, recently, panned a film called The Beach Bum.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? Because we were we were like, nothing happens in this fucking film, right? I think that since watching that Beach Bum movie, the Harmony Korine thing, it's a Matt McConaughey movie, since that review, I've thought about it a bit, and I believe the reason some people like those Harmony Korine films is that, despite nothing happening in the movie, right, the film might not be trying to tell a story necessarily, which is kind of intuitive. What the film is trying to do, I think, is impart a feeling. And the Beach Bum is like that. Beach Bum feels like a fucking, like a Jimmy Buffett song, or like a weekend at the Florida Keys or something. And that's, in this movie, I believe Tarantino is doing more of a mood thing. That's why he's showing you driving. That's why he's showing you these boring kind of like stretches between the real scenes in the movie. You're feeling the 60s.
Sure.
And that I understand, but I don't think he did it effectively enough to keep me entertained. That's why this is one of his least entertaining
movies. I hope you're not saying that this film is equivalent to Around the Level of the Beach Bum.
That's why I thought you were going
to
pick it.
Because I've got every button under the sun ready to push you on the soundboard.
No, Beach Bum is shit and not a patch on this film, and it's not even worth comparing them.
All right.
But that's where I learned that this is something I'm maybe in my old age I'm trying to accept.
Okay.
So, right. You know.
Well, look, I do have criticisms of the film too. It's not like I love this.
Tell me about it.
And the pacing's the big one, right? You really are asked to buy into it and just go along with this ride, as we've now called it. I also think that Sharon Tate's character being kind of sidelined, just being this sort of cipher for happiness at the time.
She's barely there.
She's not doing much in the film. She's just this happy. And apparently she really was a lovely, lovely woman. Like, really, that was what they're showing is not a fairy tale. That is her. She was the nicest, most gracious, most easygoing person. You know, never used her stardom, relative stardom anyway, to further her own ends in that way. Like, she's not that typical, you know, I'm better than you are kind of celebrity impression that some of them give off.
Absolutely. She seems like, and that's why you like her so much. Yes. And she's a nice ray of hope in the film. Yeah. Right?
And she does look remarkably similar to her Margot Robbie, the way that they do her makeup and the like.
I just think she's beautiful. I was looking because they show images of her films and they don't look like the same person to me at all. But
I thought they did.
Yeah.
Very similar.
I think just the fashion was just knocking me off. What she was wearing was amazing.
Yeah.
Right.
The other thing that really annoys me about this film, and then we'll get into spoilers, although it won't be a long spoiler section. Is the way that Tarantino resorts to having to use Kurt Russell as the narrator. So we get one line from him in an early scene in the film, and then nothing until we suddenly skip forward for the third act 6 months, and now we've got 10 minutes of Kurt Russell narrating everything's happened. I'm like, what?
You find that inconsistent?
Yeah, completely inconsistent, and it feels like a crutch that he didn't find a way around, and he should have.
To me, it felt gimmicky because he's done it a little bit in his movies before, and I can't remember who and where, but I think in one he just talked. He was the actual narrator.
If you want to have a narrator in your film,
you got to have it all the way along.
Well, you got to have it consistently. Maybe it it starts every chapter or every major new thing. It's like, and now we move on to like.
I kind of see what you mean, because
whereas just to throw it in there suddenly, like, oh fuck, this film's going 160 minutes already. I better shoot going.
Yeah,
we're rushing now for the end instead of being able to take our time with that in the way that we did with the first two. We should have been cutting back the first two.
Exactly.
Acts.
That's the thing. They made you sit through this shit, and now we're rushing at the end. Yes. That was my problem. This movie here, at no time did I feel. Not at no time. For long stretches, I wasn't feeling that specter of violence. I was like, oh, this is just people doing shit. Like, this is just you following their lives.
Well, it's kind of like you have to be into Hollywood. If you don't like movies in the sense of how were they made and what was it like, and if that's not for you, this film is going to be a struggle.
You need to have patience when you watch this film, and I don't necessarily think that's good. So you shouldn't need patience as an audience. You should just fall into the movie, right?
Yeah, I think as long as it pays off.
It just feels like the driving force of the movie is weak.
Okay.
You know?
I'm not going to argue too hard.
As halfway through it, I'm like, where is this film going? That shouldn't be a moment I have.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. I get what you're saying. All right, look, we're dancing now around it. So let's hit the button to say, well, basically for me, it's a recommend if you are a Tarantino fan or you're into this kind of loving rendition of the era / making movies. If that's your jam, absolutely see this film.
No, you'll probably
because it's
like
probably the least Tarantino film that's ever Tarantino.
Agreed. 100% agreed.
Far less violence, though when it does happen, it's very, very brutal. There is far less of the tension, as you've described, and there's far less of these massively intense dialogue scenes.
Yeah.
Right? There's a lot more space to breathe.
And I think I would have preferred
a bit more dialogue. Yeah, all right. So be aware of that part going in if you haven't already, but otherwise, I recommend it. You?
Yes, I do, because if you're a movie, connoisseur or even just a casual fan, you should see all the Quentin Tarantinos. You should just see them all, even if you don't like them all. So I recommend it carefully to some people. Most people, but not some people know.
All right, seems fair. All right, then that's the Countdown's basic reaction. Let's get into a few spoilers and we'll wrap it up with final scores on the other side of this. Probably says something about A, the length of the film, and B, how invested we are in Tarantino films. This is the longest we've recorded before we got to spoilers.
Really? Yeah. Oh, God, yeah.
So let's make this quick. So, yes, as we talked about, the specter of Sharon Tate and her murders at the hands of Charlie Manson's family hangs over this film and gets larger and larger as the film progresses. It builds to the night in question.
Right. And that's where I realized what went on here. Yep. Okay, so that's when I was like, oh, my God. Because Margot Robbie, again, because she's portrayed so wonderfully in the film, I love her. And in real life, she was almost full-term pregnant when this happened.
Yeah.
All right? And she is in the movie as well.
Yep.
And I'm like, I don't want to see this. And I thought, you know what? Given the actual timber of the movie so far and the tone it's playing, if they end it with a grisly murder like that, this won't work.
Well, here's the thing. Not for 1 minute did I believe they were going to end with Sharon Tate. Because the whole time, the biggest thing about this movie for me as I was watching it was Inglourious Basterds.
What?
In Inglourious Basterds, Tarantino changed history. He wrote his version of how it should have gone.
Right.
Right. And I would have bet, if you had given me the opportunity, if you had said, I would have put $100 that he would do the same thing.
Really?
Movie. Yep.
Do you know that occurred to me? I sat there going, I don't want to watch this. And the second thought was, I hope he does that thing where he changes the history. And fortunately, he did.
I was really confident. What I wasn't confident of was that Dalton and Booth were going to survive. I was pretty sure one or both were going to die. So it didn't go the way I thought. But it did go away from the direction that I didn't think it could go, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. Well, I mean, them making the murder come to the two guys is automatically better, all right? Them making Brad Pitt on acid, right? So that when it comes and the actual specter of those three horrible women and the dude, and he's like amused by it almost, because, oh, there's a murder there, what are these guys? Whatever, you know? And that made it pleasant to watch for me. So I'm like, okay, I'm in here. And then...
Well, I can't remember the dog's name. The dog's great.
The dog is the best. And I'm sitting there going, please don't hurt the dog. Please don't hurt the dog.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. I thought, fuck, the dog's in trouble. I thought all that. Because this is Tarantino and we haven't had a death in this movie. And what's this is going to go. And it does. It gets bloodthirsty. It gets full on. Then when Brad Pitt and the dog attack, oh man, they go to town.
They go to town and it's this sudden violence.
Now, here's maybe something of a problem with the film.
What?
In this day and age. And look, these are people who murdered a group of people.
Yep.
And we're not meant to sympathize with them at all. But it's still a little hard to watch the graphic level that he goes to in dispatching the women. For some reason, Brad Pitt stomping the guy's head in is fine.
Of course it is.
And that's sexist, I guess. But
no, it's sexist against men, which is not sexist. but I agree. I saw it and I was like, ooh, they're really going to town because he's smashing a head against the fucking...
That's it. It was cathartic. It was... You were happy. I know that's maybe most people were.
Nah. Don't be afraid of this shit, okay? Do not be a bitch, Paul. Okay?
It was played for laughs and it is fine.
I'm fucking fine with it. These are murdering bitches and dudes all getting dispatched.
And that's what he's relying on to get you through it.
And it got me completely. Yeah. If it's just, you know, it's the same as... If you allow that to like temper your thing, it's fine.
I know, but it's just...
I'll
tell you what
would
have worked better.
What?
Had Sharon Tate, and I know it was ridiculous, she's full-term pregnant, somehow been involved in defending herself and taking one of these bitches out.
Yes, actually, I agree with you.
Yeah.
Because he could do anything.
That would have
stage.
Then been like, we've watched her floating around the edges of this film the whole time. Now she comes into her own and she takes back agency. That would have been almost, in a way...
Well, it would have more invalidated her reason for being in the film.
And thematically more satisfying, I think.
Yeah, and I liked all the supporting characters around her and stuff like that as well. But, I mean...
Roman Polanski never gets a word in.
He never gets a word in.
He's just flopping about in his weird Austin Powers suit.
Yeah, sort of like cravat and shit. Yeah. But, I've got a question, though, about this whole Manson thing. Because, again, I didn't know it was there and what it was about, okay? There's a bit where Brad Pitt goes to the fucking
This is the other really
compound.
Tense scene, which really builds beautifully.
Okay, go.
And ends in nothing, virtually.
No, like a lot of shit, but like he goes there. So this is actually a question that I have about the movie, all right? Are we to understand that him going to that compound was where Ted Manson's family were all...
Charlie Manson's family
and all the hippie girls.
Yeah.
Are they all murderers?
Well, they're all part of his cult.
Disciples.
Yeah.
So when he goes in and sees Bruce Dern.
Yeah.
All right? He's not Charlie. He's not.
Well, he's the owner of the land, and it looks like he's just happy getting his end wet with a much younger woman.
Okay, so then, because they do actually depict Manson in the movie where he goes to the door.
That's another odd decision. He's there for one scene.
He's not even
and disappears.
That's right.
And I mean, history shows that Manson
wasn't there
at the murders.
Yeah.
He ordered them to happen, and they happened. But nevertheless, it's an odd decision to
have him completely
taken out of the film again after that.
I reckon when Brad Pitt goes to that place and then he goes, that was cool that he sat down and, whatever, they talked and he's 2 seconds, he comes back out and then someone stuck his tire.
And so
he beats that guy
up
and then says, okay, fix it, right? And then go get Tex, you know? He sees them right off to go get the guy and he just doesn't give a fuck.
Whatever. Because he's a Green Beret and I love the fact that he's accused of killing his wife, which is clearly a nod to, what's her name? Robert Wagner and
Christopher Walken and Ellie Wood.
Yes.
Yeah. That,
even
though
that
on the
happened,
boat.
That
on
happened
boat.
After this.
Exactly. There was totally a nod, right?
That's a nod.
Well.
And they never show it. Like they strongly hint, but is it an accident? Or did he hit a bump and the harpoon went off? Or did he really kill her?
Exactly.
And and she's just obviously a horrible person.
Because she's a bitch, it's okay. Yeah.
But
you're now on that character's side still.
Well, you understand it. And it leaves it up in the air, which is kind of cool. I like that fact that it doesn't give you the answer. Did you squeeze? Was there a bump?
Exactly. Because you're now interested more in the character.
And we skipped over it, but the fight scene between him and Bruce Lee.
All right, let's talk about that.
Fucking awesome.
Dude. All right. Thing comes on and he's talking like Bruce Lee, but not in a faithful way.
Yeah.
Although God knows Bruce Lee's family is very upset about this.
There's some real controversy.
And I agree. Bruce Lee probably wouldn't be a showboater, like in terms of like...
Well, apparently he was.
That's the thing. So I did the research as well, right? So his daughter says that, look, he would never talk about... He had to downplay his skills so that the white man would accept him. That's what she said.
Yeah.
Right? And Quentin Tarantino says, people say he wouldn't say that. Well, yes, he did say that. And
well,
yes, he did.
He claims, and indeed others who have set up and said, he did have a mouth.
Think about it, right? If you're the best martial artist on the planet or you're famous in Hollywood and you're the biggest deal in the world and you're from, China or whatever, like you're not used to Hollywood, you're going to be that Hollywood guy, aren't you?
You think so?
I would. I'm sure I'm such an asshole. I would be that way.
And it's pretty clear that there isn't a winner in this fight, which Tarantino steps around gracefully, I thought, because, first of all, Bruce Lee just kicks him straight down. And then Brad Pitt throws him into the car.
And then
they're squaring off and then no one's getting the upper hand until it gets broken up.
That's right. So. And I reckon that was the whole deal with this. You've got, for him to, because I actually kind of think that probably might happen. Like if you're Bruce Lee and you can bust people's ass, you're quicker than everyone. But honestly, when it comes to fighting someone, outside a certain size difference, it doesn't matter. You could be the best guy in the world, and unless you've got weapons, a guy bigger than you can take more hits and just pick you up and take you out.
Right. I'll take your word, because obviously you're the
martial artist. But that was cool. But him throwing it into the car and denting the car, that was the shit.
And that has a great line, probably the best line of the entire film, which is, my hands are registered as lethal weapons, which means if I kill some, I go to jail. Anyone kills someone, they go to jail. It's called manslaughter. I loved Brad Pitt in this movie.
No, he's great.
He's back in a big way.
How old is he?
He's 54 or something like that. 53, 55? Something like that.
He's killing it.
He looks. I mean, not, it's not just bad. I just
he's everything.
The
his
swagger,
vitality.
The confidence. I just loved his character so much, and he really was the anchor for Dalton in all that he's going through, his insecurities and the like, as we touched on. Yeah, that's what really got me through this movie. I dug those two so much and their performances.
Yeah,
and yeah, and I'm down. I like the way he fucked with the ending again. It would have been better if Tate was involved. But yeah, that's basically my thoughts.
What did you think about the flamethrower?
Again, it's so comically exaggerated and over the
good.
Top. Yeah,
it was really, really
it's
good.
It's a pretty full on moment.
Anyone ordered fried sauerkraut? Yeah.
Which is kind of a reference to Inglourious Basterds, right?
Oh yes, good point. Yeah. I didn't even think
so
about that.
It's all, and if you stay for the end credits, there is a scene midway through, which is again Dalton doing an advert for Red Apple.
Red Apple cigarettes.
So once again, building his universe and sort of linking them all in together. That is it. Then I think we've gone long enough on this one, Wayne. Anything else burning you want to say?
No. You hear what I say. I'm actually struggling with my score.
All right, well, this is going to be interesting. Here's our final thoughts.
What's
and score?
Oh, your score.
I'm giving this a flat 70.
Fuck.
Yep.
62.
Okay, so it's not that big a difference.
No, it's not. It's not, again, it's... I'm thinking to myself, how many passes am I giving this because it's Tarantino, right? And
maybe.
I'm struggling with that a bit.
I can own that I am slated or slanted to support him rather than crucify him.
It's, you know what? If he'd said this is a drama with a sort of soupçon of action or violence, I would have liked it more. I was expecting violence all the way through, and I started getting pissed off.
I wasn't. Because the trailer's fast cut gives you a sense of a much greater urgency. So maybe there's a little bit of, you know, overselling that. But it doesn't ever sort of suggest that this is going to be a crime opus, you know.
Oh, that's the thing. That's why I didn't know what it was. But this is written to be a kind of meandery.
Oh, it's a drama. It's like absolutely
that's
falls
right.
to the
so
drama.
So you should have told me it was a drama. Somehow.
Well, if you had read anything about the fucking film, you would have known.
Well, no, the trailer should I don't know.
All right, that is it for our review of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Let us know if you got it right or wrong, and you can do so via email at thecountdownpodcast@gmail.com, on Twitter at thecountdownpc, or join up, link in the show notes to our Facebook listening community. Get involved in the great discussions with some awesome people there. Check us out on our Australian home, ccradio.com.au, and the other great shows as part of the CC Radio Network, and we host through Podbean, so you can subscribe. Follow us and make comments there.
Word.
That is it for our review today. Thanks so much for joining us. My name is Paul.
My name is Wayne.
And this has been The Stand...
The what? Board.
The Stand Board.
The Stand Board,
yes,
you say.
The Stand Board.
Yeah,
shut up.
I'll stand on that fucking board.
I stand resolute, motherfucker.
Stand all over the motherfucker.
Catch you next week.
Yeah.